Today, we begin our experience of the Sermon on the Mount. When Jesus ascends a mountain and begins to address the crowds, we are expected to make the connection to another teacher, Moses, and another mountain, Sinai. And soon enough, Jesus will complete that picture by offering an instruction in righteousness. The Sermon on the Mount will have plenty to say about what we, as kingdom people, should and should not do. But that's not how the sermon begins. It begins with a list, but not with a list of thou shalt's and thou shalt not's. Too often people try to make the Beatitudes into law. Be merciful, and you will receive mercy. That may be true at times, but it is not what Jesus is saying here. The list we find here is in the indicative mood, not the imperative. It is descriptive, not prescriptive. Jesus is not insisting that we become people who starve to see justice done. What he is saying is that such people are blessed of God. God looks upon such people with favor. God's eye is on them. They will be happy in the end. This, says Jesus, is the way things are. But if the Beatitudes are a description of reality, what world do they describe? Certainly not our own. Blessed are the meek, says Jesus. But in our world, the meek don't get the land. Blessed are the merciful, says Jesus. But in our world, mourning may be tolerated for a while, but soon we will ask you to pull yourself together and move on. Blessed are the pure in heart, says Jesus. But in our world, such people are dismissed as hopelessly naive. When Jesus goes up the mountain with his disciples, we get our first glimpse of Jesus as an authoritative teacher. We know that Jesus is a teacher and a healer because the Sermon on the Mount follows a summary statement of Jesus' activity. Jesus went throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and curing every disease and every sickness among the people. Matthew shows Jesus to be an active agent of God's power among the people and an authoritative teacher, highlighted by the Sermon on the Mount. And this week's passage is the overture, if you will, to this sermon. The Beatitudes serve as sort of a preamble for the way in which Jesus will interpret the law and how he will conduct his ministry. So far in Matthew, Jesus has prepared for his ministry. He has been baptized. He has been tempted by Satan. He has called his first four disciples. He has taught in the synagogues, proclaimed the good news, and cured diseases and sickness. Now he turns to teaching his disciples, possibly only the four that have so far been called, Andrew, Simon Peter, James, and John. The crowds, then, serve as a sort of backdrop to this sermon. They aren't the direct audience of the sermon, but they are presumably the recipients of the divine favor Jesus says God has in store. Blessed are the poor in spirit. The poor in spirit are those who lack, who are materially bereft and therefore worn down by the plight of poverty. They are those whom society has left behind, who break their backs to make ends meet, who struggle for basic survival crushes their spirit. From the time of the composition of the Psalms, the poor had been understood as a characterization of the true people of God, those who know their lives are not in their own control and that they are dependent on God. Jesus says theirs is the kingdom of heaven, for there will be no poor in spirit there. God will set things right. Blessed are those who mourn. Grief comes for all of us, but mortality rates were higher in the ancient world. Parents simply could not expect their children to survive infancy, let alone make it to adulthood. It was not a given. War, food and housing insecurity, and infectious diseases could cut a life short. And yes, it is right to grieve the loss of one's land. Jesus' audience was living under imperial occupation, and the audience of the gospel, encountering this story after Rome's destruction of Jerusalem and the temple, were certainly grieved by the violation of their land and sacred space. The promised land was occupied. Also, biblically speaking, one of the characteristics of the true people of God is that they lament the present condition of God's people and God's program in the world. This is the community that does not resign itself to the present condition of the world as final, but laments the fact that God's kingdom has not yet come and that God's will is not yet done. Yet to those who mourn, Jesus proclaims a coming comfort. Blessed are the meek. This is a reference to Psalm 37. Here, meek refers to those who are abused by the wicked who seem only to prosper. God reassures the meek that they will inherit the land, the earth. Jesus likewise tells the disciples that those who are abused by the wicked will inherit the land, a land currently claimed and exploited by Rome for the benefit of a few. God's rule will reverse this. Meekness is here a synonym for poor in spirit. It is not a matter of a particular attitude one is urged to adopt, but characterizes those who are aware of their identity as the oppressed people of God in the world, those who have renounced the violent methods of worldly power. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Righteousness in the Hebrew Bible refers to a total societal restructuring that includes the equitable distribution of resources. Those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, then, are those that Rome's unjust distribution keeps at the margins of subsistence. They long for the coming of God's kingdom and the vindication of right, which will come with it, and who, on the basis of this hope, actively do God's will now. In a reimagined society, all will have enough. And Jesus says that in God's kingdom, these folks will be filled, and it will be God who will do the filling. Blessed are the merciful. Jesus says that those who practice mercy, those who give of their resources and care for the outcast, will receive mercy. Rome was not known for showing mercy. Rome violently expanded its rule and heavily taxed its population to the point of food insecurity. God's rule is different. In God's kingdom, all will be welcome and will have plenty. In none of the Beatitudes is advice being given for getting along in the world, where mercy is more likely to be regarded as a sign of weakness than to be rewarded in kind. Yet the merciful will receive mercy from God at the last judgment. Blessed are the pure in heart. The pure in heart are those who follow the will of God in their thinking and doing. Jesus will expand on the importance of a person's heart in discipleship later in the sermon. But purity of heart is not merely the avoidance of impure thoughts, but refers to the single-minded devotion to God. Faith in the one God requires that we be devoted to God with all our heart. The opposite of purity of heart is a divided heart, attempting to serve two masters. To those that commit to God thoroughly, without hypocrisy, will see God, an image of intimate, face-to-face encounter with God. Blessed are the peacemakers. This is particularly interesting, as Rome claimed to be the bearers of peace. But Rome's peace only comes through domination. In Matthew, peace is not the absence of conflict. Jesus is well aware that his message will cause division. However, no one is ever coerced or forced into becoming a disciple. Rome subjugated people to their rule through threat and violence. Entry into God's kingdom is voluntary. Peacemakers enact not the empire's will, but God's merciful reign, living toward this wholeness and well-being and against any power that hinders or resists it. For those of us living comfortable lives in the wealthiest nation in the world, how can we embody the Beatitudes? How can we pursue justice, righteousness, and peace? How can we embody God's promises to those that are poor, mourn, and oppressed? When the Beatitudes are rooted in embodiment rather than spiritualized, we can more clearly see the ways we could act to bring God's kingdom into people's lives. Jesus says, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for justice's sake. When people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account." The life of a disciple of Jesus runs counter to the values of the world. Perhaps we don't experience persecution in our modern American context in the way that early Jesus' followers did. No one is looking to kill us simply because we confess Christ. But do not be deceived. When we live a life for justice for the oppressed and marginalized, when we extend mercy to the outcast, when we live the values outlined in the Beatitudes, the rulers of this world will resist us. If we are honest, we must admit that the world Jesus asserts as fact is not the world we have made for ourselves. And so, for now at least, we do not yet see all these things. But we do see Jesus. Jesus not only declares, but embodies this new world. An old poem promises that a day is coming when every knee will bow and every tongue confess that a crucified man is Lord. Everyone will see at last that the one hung upon a tree in shame, the one who in poverty of spirit was forsaken by everyone, the last of the last, is first, is Lord of all. Every tongue will admit that the man of sorrows, the mourner, is comforted at last in the power of resurrection. Every tongue will confess that the meek lamb who did not open his mouth before the slaughters has been granted the earth and everything in it. Every tongue will confess that the one who longed for justice has lived to see justice, that the one who practiced purity of heart is standing in the presence of God, that the great peacemaker is now called the Son of God. On that day, every tongue will confess that the one who was persecuted for the sake of righteousness is indeed blessed of God. Until that day, the Beatitudes stand as a daring act of protest against the current order. Jesus cannot very well insist that we be poor in spirit, but he can show us how to look upon such people with new eyes and so gain entrance to a new world. On All Saints' Day, the Beatitudes testify that it matters deeply whom we call saint. The kingdom Jesus proclaimed and embodied is precisely a new way of seeing, a new way of naming, and so a new way of being. The current regime sweeps aside those Jesus declares blessed of God, but we are invited to look again and discern a new reality that is coming into being. When we learn to recognize such people as blessed, to call them saints, we pledge our allegiance to that new world, even as we participate in its realization. Thanks be to God.